I'll begin side two of broadcast number 660, July 30th, 1984, and go on to the appointments. Now, I'm not going into the past of Mrs. Burford. You know her past. You have articles, or should have saved them, of her record with the Environmental Protection Agency. But I do want to bring out several articles just this last week that pertain to the environment, then three articles that pertain to the ocean that she'll have something to say about, and then on to Ann Burford before we get to the other appointments, because there's something very sinister lurking behind Ronald Reagan putting her here at this time, and I feel I can pretty well untangle it, and I studied it very well. Just in the past week, there have been, in the past 2 weeks, there have been articles on the environment, the legacy that this woman left, that have to do with when she was in office, that are not yet cleaned up and how they affect us. One is the Washington Post, June 30th, House Mutiny on Water Projects Averted by the Black Spots. This has to do with $18 billion worth of water projects, and she will be on ocean and water and rivers as it comes along. And when they wanted to pass an $18 billion project in Congress, the congressional members went ready for the roll call on how they would vote, and they were given a map of the United States with black spots next to their pet project. If they came from California, it was there. If they were from Arizona, it was there, or South Dakota or Florida. And the maps had a black dot on their area, and they were told, if you don't vote for the entire bill, then your pet project would be deleted. And the message came home, and the vote was for the entire bill, 196 to 148. Evidently, 148 members of Congress were not afraid. But Representative Harold Wolpe of Michigan said they used to talk in cloakrooms that they would kill your project if you oppose anybody else's, but this is the first time it has been put on paper. The dispenser of the black spot list was Representative Howard, Democrat of New Jersey, a map saying, this is your project. If you don't vote for the whole package of $18 billion, when you go home to your constituents, it won't be there. Another story, San Francisco Examiner, June of 84, about June 28th. Environmentalists charge that the Superfund ignores 43 toxic dumps. The Environmental Protection Agency failed to include 43 sufficiently dangerous toxic dumps when they made their list in 11 states. Five of the 43 locations are more dangerous than Love Canal. IRC Fibers in Painesville, Ohio, 35 miles east of Cleveland on Lake Erie. This was not listed. The Ford Motor Company, Monroe, Michigan. The MPS Incorporation, Canton, Ohio. The Ironton Coke in Ironton, Ohio. McClellan Air Force Base in Sacramento. High dangerous sites that were not on, and we were left. And Ms. Buford had 3 years, 546 dangerous sites that haven't had a start on being cleaned up. Another story, June 26th. Superfund in California, we need a superfund. California needs $24.5 million to clean up the hazardous waste of McColl Hazardous Waste Dump in Fullerton is one of those examples. $24.5 million is a starter, and they have now elected to put up some money, but the Environmental Protection Agency had internal problems, and California was caught in the middle for some time. That's when she wouldn't allow any money to come into the state for fear that Jerry Brown would get credit in election year of helping get funds for his state to clean up the pollution. Another story, EPA soft pedal. This is Jack Anderson, June 30th. The Environmental Protection Agency has been using three chemicals, methylisel that's on tobacco leaves. It causes tumors and induces cancer. They've been using that and misleading the review of the chemicals. Permethrin, formerly for cotton, now on lettuce, potatoes, pears, celery, cabbage, and Brussels sprouts. If the used levels are applied, it could lead to cancer in 5 to 10% of the people exposed. Harvade, an agent that's a carcinogenic, a pesticide that they didn't give adequate warning. Another story, panel calls, this is the one for the czar of toxic cleanup in California. The cost right now will be $20 million a year because we don't have the money, and it'll take up to 2084 to touch the 200 most hazardous toxic sites. That was Ann Burford, who was appointed, never should have been appointed, Environment Protection Agency, with this kind of work behind her. Another San Francisco Examiner story, July 3rd, toxic waste cleanup bill slashed by $100 million. The California Assembly slashed by $100 million the money needed to clean up through this administration some of the pollution that's going on in this state. And finally, a story in the New York Times, Reagan's air water policy is foul. And this has to do with, in the past 3 years, it says, in 3 years we have not advanced a single detailed proposal of our own for reform of any of the major health, safety, or environmental statutes. That is the woman that is being promoted to this other job, if you can believe it, as chairman of the National Advisory Committee of Ocean and Atmosphere. Not a single change in 3 years, this New York Times story has a study. It says that the EPA was a festering scandal for years, that it had a budget cutback, hazardous waste, toxic chemicals. The law enforcement was at a standstill, and it says half of the drinking water supplies in major cities already has toxic chemicals, and the administration refused to curb the sulfur emissions, and this is affecting the earth, air, and water. That was when she was in office, and now she's been promoted to this wonderful new position. Now, regarding the ocean, there are just three articles, and I have many on the ocean, that I think pertain to Ms. Burford in particular. One is November 21st, 1983, New Findings on Ocean Expedition. This is the Glomar Challenger that was built by the CIA. It's made 96 voyages. It was used as a spy ship, of course, and part of the overthrow of Allende down in Chile. They're now drilling holes into the ocean floor at more than 600 sites in the ocean. Imagine how she would stand up to this. The team that she's been working with have been using the Glomar. They've bored through thousands of feet of the seafloor, and they are designed to assess the unmanned system for installation on Soviet territory, monitor the Soviet testing, and the sensors now remain in holes, still connected by cable to the processing package to transmit acoustic signals. So the Glomar has planted 600 sites under the ocean with a network of cables for war to set up against the Soviet Union. That's one way to use the ocean. Another story, Oceanography for Smarter Wars, New York Times, July the 3rd, just this past week. Two priorities of the Navy ocean science are the Southern Oceans and the world's strategic straits. Commodore John Seesholtz, S-E-E-S-H-O-L-T-Z, from the Navy, is giving the battle commanders a better idea of hour-to-hour marine environment. He has 3,000 people in 65 locations around the world with global positioning stations using oceanography for optimum tracking of ship routes and aircraft routing. So not only is there a space war, the use of space stations that we hear so much about with Mr. Fritz Kramer's partner, Daniel Graham, and the high frontier going into the whole network of the Reagan administration and Helionetics, that group that I've barely touched on the air, but this is the ocean for exploration of war. And finally, another article, July the 3rd. Now, these two articles, one about the smarter wars and the other one about ocean exploration, came out the same day that Ann Burford was put on this committee for the special nomination for the Advisory Committee on Oceans. And this is the same day that she is given this blatant appointment, this story comes out. The United States wants to expand the ocean jurisdiction within 200 miles of every border of the United States, 200 miles for the expedition research of minerals and so forth within 200 miles. The United States would acquire, it's the acquisition of the United States of, through the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Energy and Navy, the ability to increase our territory to 200 miles around us. Now, it's interesting that they refer to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration when she is on the Advisory Committee of the Oceans and the Atmosphere. The very same day, the Navy, the Army, the Environment want to make our borders 200 miles out all the way around. They would expand the United States territory 3.9 billion acres, which would add to U.S. land. It would be officially ours, where we have 2.3 million acres now. It was described as the largest territorial acquisition since Lewis and Clark. And that is one of the things they have in mind. Now, to get to the Burford appointment, when her committee that she would be chairman of, appointed chairman of, the National Advisory Committee on Oceans and Atmosphere, makes policies and recommendations to the Commerce Department, to the National Oceanic Administration, regarding oil drilling, ocean dumping, sewage and sludge, and all kinds of things that affect the ocean and atmosphere, whether atomic refuge would be sent into there and so forth. Now, when she was working for the Environmental Protection Agency, she was accused of making sweetheart deals with industry, political manipulation of her decisions, blacklisted agencies and employees she didn't want to hire, removed and destroyed subpoenaed documents, and she was brought across the coals but never prosecuted or cited by the Justice Department. She resigned December 1983 and was cited for contempt of Congress on orders of the President to hold back from the House subcommittee documents on holding up 1.6 billion of hazardous waste. Just one example. Now, along with her appointment, along with Ann Burford, the President made other appointments whose biographies we should study. Retired Navy Captain John Bennett of Solano Beach, California, William Brewster of Massachusetts. He's Vice President of the Atlantic Salmon Federation, Lee Gerard from the Getty, Professor of Geology at Colorado School of Mines in Englewood, Colorado. There are seven appointments, I won't go into all the names now, that he put on with Ann Burford at the same time, which is really a snow job. Now, Stephen Anastasione is the Executive Director of the Advisory Panel. He said that the 18-member body, there are 18 members there, and 8 were appointed at this time by Ronald Reagan, will advise on programs ranging from the Defense Department, from the Defense Navigation Systems, to wetland protection, to subsea mining, for scarce mining of minerals and nuclear waste management. But scarce mining, the minerals that they talked about in terms of opening up this department that she is appointed to, goes back to the article in the New York Times about the mining and setting the 200-mile boundary around our shore, which would be commercial. And the reason I think that Reagan maybe wants to sack the whole thing, if they fund them, it's a catch-22. They'll go on with what they intend to do through the minerals and mine and staking the posts and the military satellites in the ocean. If you sack them, then it would go to the business people and the military alone, so either way you lose. But one of the jobs is to check the subsea mining of scarce minerals close to our shore. Now, the only person working with Ann Burford that even got a tap on the wrist was Rita Lavelle, who was fired. She was sentenced to 6 years in prison. She'll, of course, never serve, and fined $10,000 for lying to Congress, and you know that she's never going to go to jail for that. But if Ms. Burford was charged with political handling of the environmental to the way that she was and manipulating it for political reasons, what makes her qualified to decide on the atomic waste, the use of the ocean for waste? Now, there was a story in the newspaper about a conflict she had leading to the exposure of the department. This was in the Houston Post, July 8, 1984. Reagan's appointment is a callous slap in the face of the environmentalists and the National Advisory Committee on Oceans and Atmosphere, once created by the Nixon administration, used to be bipartisan. Now Reagan has torpedoed the NACOA with a zero budget, and the Houston Post gave me the idea maybe he's trying to destroy it by having Burford as chairman. And they go into Sharon Stewart's quotation. She was replaced when Reagan put in his new team, and Sharon Stewart testified that this person opposed the incineration of hazardous waste in the Gulf of Mexico. This, of course, is close to the Houston Post that came out. And the company hired to do the hazardous waste incinerating was the Chemical Waste Management Incorporation, the nation's biggest waste disposal company, and they were trying to get Ann Burford's Environmental Protection Agency to permit two incinerator ships to operate in the Gulf of Mexico to burn the hazardous waste out there. And Chem West, that was the company, was figured in a multiple congressional investigation that led to the Burford resignation in the first place. In 1981 to 1982, Ann Burford had her special assistant under the Environmental Protection was James Sanderson. Now, Sanderson worked for Burford, and he worked for Chemical Waste at the same time that he was advising her on the decision to burn the waste out there over the shore, this dangerous, hazardous waste. Nobody knew what would happen to the environment. That's what led to her downfall. So imagine putting her in charge now of the atomic material they're talking about, burying it in the ocean, and that was pulled back just a while ago to be put possibly up in Washington State. But if Reagan is reelected, goodness knows where it'll go. So the head of the special assistant under Ann Burford, James Sanderson, in 1981-82 worked for Chem Waste, who was coaxing the Environmental Protection Agency to incinerate hazardous waste over that area. And she knew for 2 months before he left the EPA of the conflict of interest. William French Smith, of course, said there was no basis for criminal charges. He's the best attorney general that ever came along. He hasn't prosecuted one of 100 things that should be going on in the Reagan administration. Now, the New York Times had a story July the 12th. They said President Nixon and Gerald Ford made several unqualified appointments, but they were nothing like what Ronald Reagan was doing. That Ronald Reagan is able to circumvent Congress's legislative intent. What they enacted new legislation at one time to require specific qualifications for the appointment, the environmentalist. But Reagan is circumventing the Congress's legislative intent. Now Congress can finally, if they want to, act that the appointees, every appointee, face a Senate confirmation instead of these quickie things that he's passing through. There is the opinion in the Washington Post that the panel on oceans may sink with a Burford splash, but I'm saying maybe he wants it to sink so that the multinationals and the military, the business and the military, will make the decisions, and then this group won't be allowed to interfere. The Senate voted 74-19 to withdraw the appointment of Burford, and Ronald Reagan said, "No, I won't." That's the hollow head on the mug he's selling for $500. And Burford, he said, is fine by me, and I want her, and he absolutely will not back out. He doesn't back out on anyone. He didn't do it with Raymond Donovan, the Secretary of Labor, when the investigations came and linked to the mobs, and at the time they were going on, two of the witnesses that were testifying against him were found dead. He still stayed in the Labor Department. Then Ann Burford counteracted this last week by saying it's a nothing burger agency. We meet 3 times a year. They don't do anything. It's a joke. Ronald Reagan wanted to point me to something, and he did. Now, it is impossible in an election year, when he wants to appear as an environmentalist and goes out to these various agencies, he told the environmentalists that he would demonstrate his concern for the environment and to the electorate by making a series of appearances. So he stated that Chesapeake Bay, that has pollution threatening it, the Roosevelt Island, and the Mammoth Cave at the National Park in Kentucky. Ronald Reagan wanted to demonstrate his concern by showing that he would visit 3 places. And then in an election year, he puts her on. There has to be more to this committee and her choice at this time, because why take an unpopular thing and create a situation, which he has done? And I would just guess offhand that the ocean is so valuable for its minerals and for our Defense Department that if she stays there, she can be a wandering spy that goes from place to place as a bag woman. And he is not blushing about her position, and he also is taking a dangerous position by putting her there unless he has a good reason, and we have to question the reason. Now, the second appointment I mentioned, and I may just have time for two tonight and not get into Ms. Taylor, but I guarantee you we'll do that next week, and I do have a whole list that I read you. The story in Mother Jones, June 1984, the title, Brewer says he knows nothing of applicable labor laws, but this old hand of Ronald Reagan's Mr. Blacklist goes to Washington, the appointment of the month. It's called the Reagan Gate of the Month, and they could keep going these appointments for a long, long time. Mr. Blacklist goes to Washington. He says he doesn't know anything about the job that he's going to do. He knows nothing about it. That's one of the first quotations in the article. This is a sensitive federal labor post, not well known, the Federal Services Impasse Panel. During the Cold War, this Mr. Brewer was one of the most powerful red baiters in the entire entertainment industry in Hollywood. This is from the Mother Jones program magazine, if you don't have it. Hollywood labor leader, he helped the studios wreck what was he defined as a militant union. He named names before the House Un-American Activity Committee. He suppressed left-wing films. He was the arbiter of the blacklist. He was one of the handful who you had to see to say whether they were cling or not cling. And he had the list of people who would be unemployed or unemployed, and that's a lot of power. He helped people inform on their friends. He made them denounce their past, or they couldn't get into movies. Mr. Brewer today is unrepentant, according to this story, for what he did. He defends banning those people as dirty communist organizations or organizers. He sabotaged one movie, The Salt of the Earth, that was a pro-labor film made by a blacklisted by him and others movie maker. He killed Arthur Miller's screenplay about waterfront corruption. He said it was directed by Moscow, and it was made to about the Longshoremen's Union and so forth. He worked with Ronald Reagan in those days on the Motion Pictures Industry Council, which is a joint studio union effort, and they publicized Hollywood's effort to cleanse itself and rehabilitate the heretics. He worked continuously with the blacklist. He corrected the mistakes on the listings, and in this capacity, he was working when Ronald Reagan met Nancy Davis, and I long believed from what I've studied that she was a plant from when she was back at Smith College, a roommate with the Buckley, William and James Buckley's sister, and to Chicago with her very conservative father, American Medical Association, and doctor, and then out to California, where she took on Ronnie when he became a very political person. They are friends of Mr. Brewer. Later, Ronnie headed the Screen Actors Guild, and Mr. Brewer ran the Hollywood operations for the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, screening them out, and they became very close friends. There was the Conference of Studio Unions, which was an alternative within the AFL, and Mr. Brewer was fighting them and repulsed every progressive union, kept up the blacklisting. Now he's going to Washington, D.C., where he brings the city of the federal employees his lack of expertise as chairman of the Federal Service Impasse Panel. So he'll be moderating and deciding on labor union problems in Washington, D.C. Now, the third appointment that is one of those series of the arts and humanities that I'll just get on to for a few minutes, the very controversial Helen Marie Taylor. She has been appointed through the recess process to the National Council of Humanities. There was an article about her in the Village Voice in October 1983 because she had another appointment which was turned down for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. She was turned down because of her links as vice chairman of Phyllis Schlafly's Eagle Forum. She is also active, as I mentioned before, with the evangelist Pat Robertson and the Christian Broadcasting Network, and a strong supporter of accuracy in media, which is another form of blacklisting certain reporters, TV, and radio people who do not carry the far right party line. Now, what the Village Voice left out, the part missing from the Village Voice, is that she also is on the board of Western Goals. That is the notorious organization I've been talking about for the last few years. She is linked also on the board, and I can list when I go into her biography, and many of you know it, to Mr. Wigner with their connections to the Galen Operation, the BND and Nazi in Germany, and the Nazi group that were active with Adolf Hitler that are still in German intelligence. We'll do, again, the list of Western Goals organization that she's on the board of. Now, when she was nominated for this appointment on the broadcasting group, Sharon Percy Rockefeller asked Barry Goldwater to turn her down, to sack the Taylor nomination. And later she got information through General Widenmauer that her appointment was turned down because of Barry Goldwater, that she is a cousin of the general and had inside information of who didn't want her on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. She was suggested for that position. As I say, it was turned down. And during this recess process, Ronald Reagan has gotten her on the National Council of the Endowment for the Humanities. Now, in the New York Times, May 25th, there's a story about this endowment. It's 26 members of a council, of which 8 Ronald Reagan appointed last week during the recess of the 4th of July and the Democratic Convention. They spend $140 million a year. 8 of the 26 were appointed while everybody was out of Washington. Senator Claiborne Pell said that he's disappointed with the quality. Senator Ted Kennedy said he will conduct a thorough review. So if you want to send him a copy of this cassette or the sheet that goes with it, write to him. He wants to investigate it. Richard Lyman of the Rockefeller Foundation, a former president of Stanford University, said that this is very disturbing, these appointments. The common thread of the Reagan appointments is the right to life, no academic qualifications, more politicized than ever, and no regard to scholarly qualifications. The term for these people that was appointed just this last week, the term of these people is 6 years if they go through. The law said such members shall be selected on the basis of distinguished service and scholarship or creativity, artists, in which a manner will provide comprehensive representation of scholars and professional practitioners in the humanities throughout the United States. Can you imagine Robert Laxalt, the brother of Senator Paul Laxalt, charged with illegal skimming money in Nevada, links to the mob, co-partner with William Casey of the CIA, and close to Robert Keith Gray and that network I keep exposing on the air. Mr. Laxalt is one of those people. He doesn't fit the criteria of scholarship or creativity or representation of scholars or humanities in any sense of the word, and he's just one example. Now, this Helen Marie Taylor, as I say, General Wiedemeyer, well known to some of you, had asked, he was the one that asked Barry Goldwater to approve the nominee, and it was the Percy Rockefeller, she married, Senator Percy's daughter married a Rockefeller, who asked to stop her nomination before. Next week, because our time is up now, I'm going back to this person, this controversial woman from Western Goals, Helen Marie Taylor, and her funding of Western Goals of thousands of dollars, and now on this group of the humanities and arts with a budget of $140 million. I gave you a list of some of those appointments, and next week we'll go down the line as many weeks as we have to and fill in the background of what Reagan did while all of you were summering and sitting in the sun or watching your Olympics or vacationing or whatever you were doing, the conventions. Meanwhile, it's time to close now. It's Mae Brussel, and I'm on KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California.